You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, D-Aliens. This is Miraz, your executive producer of the DA Show. Yeah, I'm going to say sidekick on the DA Show. And we all know the king of all work ethic. This right here, this is the best of today's DA Show. Listen up.
Late last night, Max Scherzer, who is one of the union reps in Major League Baseball, went on a Twitter screed against the owners. Now, Scherzer is one of the best pitchers in baseball. Scherzer's a defending World Series champion. And so Scherzer's words hold some weight. And unfortunately, if you are a baseball fan and you are looking forward to baseball returning, not so fast, because Scherzer may be speaking for a lot of the players. He's one of only eight players on Major League Baseball's Players Association Executive Subcommittee. So that's a pretty significant spot that he owns in the union, one of eight players on an executive subcommittee. Scherzer tweeted late last night, "After discussing the latest developments with the rest of the players, there's no reason to engage with baseball in any further compensation reductions. We have previously negotiated a pay cut in the version of prorated salaries, and there's no justification to accept a second pay cut based upon the current information the union has received. I'm glad to hear other players voicing the same viewpoint and believe MLB's economic strategy would completely change if all documentation were to become public information." The players have countered, and they have said instead of an 82-game proposal or an 80-game proposal like we've heard about, let's look at 100 games. Let's play more games. But the owners don't want more games, at least what they're saying publicly or privately to their baseball writers who are writing about it publicly, is that they are worried that a season that drags later on to the fall could put them at risk for another outbreak, and then they'd have to cancel the end of the postseason, and that's where they would make most of their television money. So there's a lot of distrust here. And the other day, Major League Baseball proposed, okay, how about a sliding scale here? The players that make the most money take the biggest haircut. The players that make the least amount of money take less of a haircut. And that way, everybody's still making good cash. If you're on this lower end of the salary spectrum, you'll keep most of your cash. If you're Mike Trout or Bryce Harper, you're still making good money, but we're going to basically tax you because you're in a higher tax bracket more than anybody else. It has led to this. And so let's begin here with Max Scherzer's tweet last night. In terms of where baseball is right now, does this prove that the league is in serious trouble of not having a season at all? It is where we begin your cold open.
I am well aware of how this looks to the general public. It makes the players look terrible, make them look greedy. But at the end of the day, it's a business, and these are business moves, and these are players trying to get what they feel like they deserve and what they were promised in spring training with an agreement that was made that this would be a prorated salary. You play half a season, you get half of your salary that you signed for.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
So that was Will Middlebrooks on JR Sports Brief here on CBS Sports Radio. And I want to establish how I feel about these two sides before I get into my take about this. In terms of the owners, I don't believe they're fully transparent about their incomes. I don't believe that the owners have fostered a trustworthy reputation for the players. And the owners bear a responsibility here of a season on the brink. And I also believe if the season goes down the toilet and these two sides don't get their asses in gear, it is going to have a painful long-term effect for this league. I don't think this is the type of thing that you get over in 3 to 5 years as a baseball fan. I don't know if you can ever recover to where it would have been if you did play. I don't want to say it's forever, that forever baseball takes a backseat and that's it, because I can't talk forever. Who knows about forever? Things have changed dramatically over the course of these last 3 months, so who is to say what anything is for forever? But it is going to be a significant problem and a dent for baseball for the foreseeable future if they don't play here this season. And from a player's standpoint, I understand the distrust and a toxic atmosphere and the Baseball Association, the union, is saying, hey, I thought we talked about money already. Why are we still talking about money? We did this in March. But I want this clear. I don't believe the players have taken a pay cut here. I think that is a loose interpretation of the phrase pay cut. What they've been handed and agreed to is a shorter work week. That's not the same. And when I hear Will Middlebrooks or anybody else in the union, baseball players, say, well, we've already agreed to a pay cut, that's not a pay cut. They're telling you you get a prorated portion of your salary for the games played. So if there's only half a season, you get half your salary. That's akin to my bosses telling me, DA, we're going to have you on 2 days a week instead of 5 days a week, and you'll get paid 40% of your salary. That's just a reduced work week. That's not necessarily the same as a pay cut. A pay cut is, DA, we want you to work 5 days a week, and we're nicking down your original salary to 40% of what it was, or 60% of what it was, which is what is happening to many Americans in this climate. There's many of you that are dealing with reduced work weeks. There are many of you dealing with furloughs. There are many of you dealing with shifts that have been cut, but that's different than a salary reduction. And baseball players serving that up, I don't believe. I don't buy that. Because hypothetically, okay, they say you only have to play 50% of your schedule and you'll get 50% of your pay. Well, hypothetically, you could get another job for the other 50% of your day. And you might say, DA, that's unrealistic. Okay, Bryce Harper isn't going to go out and become a waiter at Applebee's. Fair, but you know what? Most Americans have to do that. Most other everybody else has had to do that, and players used to have to do that. You know, when you go back before salaries exploded to tens of millions of dollars and even just millions of dollars, baseball players on the offseason and other professional athletes had to figure out, hey, what else am I doing for income here? Because I only work half the year. Right now, you're not being asked to report to work. Yeah, you're supposed to work out and keep healthy, but you're not working. So why should you be getting paid for not working? I don't understand that part of this equation from baseball players. If baseball players want to say, hey, I thought we had a clause here that said we were not going to renegotiate if there were no fans in the stands, that's one thing. And that is a sticking point here. The owners say, we have language in our original agreement that says if there's no fans, we get to renegotiate. The players are saying, no, that language doesn't exist. We don't know as the public what's real and what's not because we don't have the actual language. And myself and Bogish and Mraz have talked about this on the show earlier. We need to see that language. We want to see that language to see, do the owners have a case that we can reopen negotiations if there's no fans in the stands? Because that's a biggie. That's a big meatball. You can't really mess that one up. If you went to the drawing table in March and you said, we might not have fans here, so let's make sure we can revisit this without fans, it's one or the other. I don't know how this is so confusing, but both sides are saying, yes, it is there. The other side saying, no, it's not. But this is not a salary reduction by players. They're just working half their year, and they're getting paid like that. There's no reason that Mike Trout should earn $37 million this year. He's not working for a full 162-game schedule. Yeah, okay, he's got to be in shape. Yes, other baseball players have to be in shape. They're not actually physically working, so don't tell me this is a pay cut. It's not yet. Baseball players don't want any pay cut. That's the problem here. They're saying we don't want to get any pay cut because right now, a shorter work week is not the same thing. There's plenty of you, I'm sure, that work seasonal jobs. Let's say you work a summer job, okay? And let's say you make $5,000 a year per month in this summer job. $5,000 a month during the summer. And your bosses come to you and say, well, you know what, guys? There really hasn't been a summer in May, so you're not working. So your $5,000 a month starts kicking in June. But instead of working May through August on that rate, now it's going to be June through August. That's not necessarily a pay cut. A pay cut would be you show up in June and they say, yeah, you're making $2,000 a month because there's just not enough visitors here anymore because of the pandemic. It's just a prorated portion of your salary. So I don't buy that for the players. I don't like that as their talking point. And I certainly don't think any of this is without fault for the owners as well. But this is so stupid and so ugly and so dumb. And for baseball fans such as myself, it is such a tired act. We went through this in 81. We went through this in 94. We went through this in 02. Every 10 years, there's labor stoppages and labor unrest and both sides sniping. And it sucks and it's tiring and it's stupid. And in this day and age, in this climate, to keep doing this just shows how tone deaf both sides are. It's humiliating for baseball. It's a bad, bad, bad look for Rob Manfred as the commissioner. And you know what? Frankly, they're already losing fans. They are. Because fans who are kind of casual and on the fence about baseball, hearing about all of these labor strife stories, they're already like, ah, you know what? Whatever. I'm into baseball. I'm into basketball anyway. I'm into hockey anyway. You know, they're already losing some credibility amongst fans that may or may not have come back. And they're just going to be like, nah, not interested. You guys suck. Again. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. When we return, we'll take your feedback on the story that Max Scherzer and the owners are kind of at one another's throats right now. Also, the 100-game proposal that the players have apparently put out there. So we're talking to start off the show also about Max Scherzer going off on Twitter last night. He is one of the more vocal and significant members of the union, and he's very much anti-owners right now, as you might imagine. And so baseball is in the lurch. And I have been critical of the players. Bogish has been much more supportive, much more pro players. The one thing I'll say on behalf of the players that I don't like from the owner standpoint here is the owner's trying to sell us that no season will lose less money than a season with TV. That's what the owners apparently are peddling. That's at least what the players are hearing behind the scenes. The owners are saying, hey, if we cancel the season, that's not nearly as bad as if we have the season without TV, so we have to cut salaries. I don't believe that at all. I don't believe there's some huge losses that they're going to incur if they get 60% of their revenue from their massive television contracts. So that part of it is a red herring. I also believe that the owners are trying to divide the union, and the union is barking back. Totally get that. What I have to rail against, though, is the idea that the players are saying we've already taken a pay cut when it's just you're not working, so you're not getting paid. I mean, to me, that's a pretty obvious one. If the players are saying, no, we should be getting paid during pandemic as well for not working, that to me is a ridiculous non-starter. But I want to give Bogish the floor here because I know that he was yelling at me the last segment under his breath and off microphone. So, Bogues, you can make the case here for Max Scherzer's Twitter screed last night.
Well, the things that were quote-unquote bothering me in the first segment is I completely disagree with your take on the pay cut front. Now, maybe we're just arguing semantics in the end, but the players are not paid to begin with based on 162 games, right? They're paid for the season. They're paid for the year. And I don't think that presenting them in line with anyone else in the country is a fair way to go about it in any other direction. They're not seasonal workers. They're not somebody doing a quote-unquote regular job. They're experts. They're specialists. And I think even when we have normal conversations
about what a guy is... to poke the bear here. I'm not doing this to disrespect you. So you're saying even if the season does not play one game, you would be in support of every player earning their entire salary.
I would not. I don't know that I would be in support of it. But the problem in general with comparing, what I was starting to say was that we can't do this ever. Like, when we're talking about any kind of salary structure in sports, when it's a simple, like, how much is that quarterback making? We have to get past comparing any of these guys, whether they're athletes or actors. When they have a specialized skill, they can't be us. They're just not. Just like even us sitting here being on the radio, we're not. Comparing us to a blue-collar worker or vice versa, it's not apples to apples. So I really just in general want to get away from that very simple comparison because it's never going to work because we're not all the same thing.
That's fair, but let's just take a different specialist. I mean, let's just take like a sniper for the FBI or sniper
sure.
for the U.S. Army. Let's
yeah.
just say, okay, there's nothing to do this year. And we don't want you on any case, and we're not going to send you anywhere. We just want you to stay at home for 365. You're saying that that person should not have their salary docked.
My guess is if there is the roster of Navy SEAL snipers, that those guys get paid the same amount, whether they sit at their house and do nothing or they've been called to Afghanistan or anywhere else 34 times in a year and have, 18 kills. They just get paid to be them. They're not at the mercy of their workload. So, yeah, I would guess that their salary is their salary. It's not based on missions or kills or bullets fired, anything like that. And whether they go on a mission and it's accomplished or not, they get what they're supposed to get. So I'm not sitting here saying that the player should get full salary. But I do think that them agreeing to a prorated salary based on the number of games being played is, to me, a pay cut. And then, therefore, when the owners are coming back here for a second attempt to take money back, I understand where their point is. Now, at some point, they both have to find room for compromise. But what still bothers me in general is the idea that the owners are coming to the table as the good guys and the players are just wrong here for not saying yes immediately and going and playing baseball. It's not that simple, and it's not a one-way decision here.
Okay, I think that's fair, and I think maybe the sniper parallel is not a good one here because I think that salary, you're right, that job description is kind of already defined by we send you out when we want to send you out. It's not like you're sent out for 162 missions every single year, then suddenly you're sent out for 82 missions. But I do think that it's a weird thing to expect that baseball players, unlike anybody else ever, just get to work half as much as they used to and expect there not to be a pay cut. I mean, of course there's going to be a pay cut.
Right.
Who has ever asked somebody to work half as much but make the same amount of money? Like, that's a totally different alternate universe. So the players using that as we've already conceded, to me, is disingenuous. That's not really a concession.
Yeah, and see, I mean, the problem, too, is that baseball sits here as the most powerful union of all of our pro leagues. So they have the heft to fight this. Now, the NBA, the NHL have had negotiations and they've been relatively quiet, partly because those owners and those leagues dominate those conversations normally anyway. And when the NFL, if push comes to shove for the NFL, I would think NFL owners are going to win because they usually win against NFL players. The baseball union is the union, so they're the ones that really can dig in here. Whether it's right or wrong, they have the strongest footing to put up a fight in this situation. And, I mean, I see it as a pay cut because any one of those guys, whether it's Mike Trout making, if they just do a simple proration, Mike Trout going from $37 million to $16 million or $19 million, whatever that number would be. I mean, that's a pay cut. Because they're not paid per game. They don't get a check as they walk out of the building after playing a game. They don't lose money if they get hurt and they don't play a full season. They don't get money withheld if they don't play in a game for whatever reason. Like, this is what they're supposed to make for 2020. And to say, well, now you're going to make $19 million or $250,000, like, it's a pay cut. It's money that they were supposed to get that they're not getting, whatever the reason. If I'm oversimplifying it, then I'm guilty of that. But they're not getting the money that they were contractually obligated to get.
Well, that's all true. But they're also under no responsibilities to be rehabbing injuries with team doctors. They're under no responsibilities to be at a facility.
Well, because they're not allowed to. They're not choosing to stay home. They're not allowed to.
No, I agree. But there is no responsibility. They have absolutely no responsibility right now. So,
but that's not true. Their contract requires them to be able to satisfy their contract. So if a guy got to be 300 pounds because he was sitting on his couch being fat during all of this, they could go, well, we're not paying you for that.
Well,
so they are absolutely under an obligation to keep themselves in shape to play.
Okay, but that's also a complete vagary, because there's going to be many of these players that do appear out of shape when we get to spring training. They might not be 300 pounds, but you could argue that 20 pounds overweight is also not satisfying what you would normally do during the regular season. So they're not showing up to any facilities. They're not showing up for any team meetings. They're not showing up to any of the daily responsibilities that they used to have. So for you, I want to know, if CBS came to you and said, Bogues, we're only doing the DA show 2 days a week. We're going to give you 40% of your salary. You don't show up the other 3 days. Do whatever you want those 3 days. You're under no responsibility to show up for meetings, to respond to emails. You have no professional responsibilities for the other 3 days a week, but you make 40% of your salary. Or they say, well, would you consider that to be a pay cut? Or would you consider that to be a shortened work week?
But that's not what's going on here. Like, they didn't just decide that, hey, we're going to play 82 games because we don't want to play 162 anymore. Like, they didn't change the dynamic of baseball for forever.
No, CBS could come to you and say, hey, the finances are the finances right now. Advertising's through the tank. And we can only afford to pay you for 2 days a week. Would you consider that a pay cut, or would you just consider that just prorated?
But here's the problem. I mean, if we're going to use this example, I mean, we all lived through this. And guess what? We have a union that went to bat for us and negotiated all sorts of different agreements depending on who we are and what we did. So, I mean, like, that's, again, this is exactly where baseball is. Baseball has owners trying to do this, and baseball has a union that's pushing back. And at some point in your scenario or this one, we all have to make decisions. So, like, in your scenario, coming to me and going, you only have to work 2 days a week, to me is not, I understand that we're cutting baseball games down, but they're also not free the other 5 days of a week. I don't think that that's an apples to apples comparison. But if it was, I'd have to make a decision, right?
Well, what type of responsibilities do you think baseball players have had over the last 3 months?
To be baseball players. To be ready to show back up for work and go about being baseball players whenever the call was made that it was safe to play again.
Well, wait a sec.
Their responsibility was to not fall apart physically or to keep themselves, like, okay, Noah Syndergaard here in New York, right?
Yeah.
Coming off Tommy John surgery. His responsibility is to rehab at 100% so he's ready to be Noah Syndergaard as soon as possible. Somebody who was injured, Justin Verlander, Aaron Judge, their responsibility right now is to be ready as soon as the Yankees and the Astros are back on the field to play baseball games again. Had Aaron Judge went, you know what, I'm not going to go to rehab now. I'm just going to sit back and let my rib heal at its own pace, he would be doing a disservice to the Yankees. He might be technically in violation of his contract.
But,
I mean, you're laughing, but that's what you're supposed to be doing here.
But if Mike Trout over the last 3 months decided to open up an eBay marketplace and he wanted to make money on the side, he absolutely could do that while still, quote unquote, being a baseball player. I mean, you're talking about a real skew here. It's not like Mike Trout is spending as many hours today as he does in season working on baseball. There's no way that that's true. So,
well, I mean, if you,
it's just about not being able to physically fall apart. I mean, that's not a really tough bar to clear.
I mean, it is if you're supposed to be Mike Trout.
Well, but you're just talking about being ready to play baseball. It's not that Mike Trout is paid based on performance here.
Now, hold on a second. Now, you guys were mad when NBA players kept saying we don't have a hoop at our house because you wanted them to go out there and keep playing
yes.
and be in shape. And you're the one that's up in arms about these guys asking for 3 or 4 weeks of training camp to go play games, but now you're saying they don't need to worry about keeping themselves in shape.
Well, but folks, that's where my bar is. Just have a hoop to shoot a little bit on to make sure that you're not completely a disgrace. But that's my bar. So if Mike Trout shows up, and instead of being Mike Trout 50 home runs a season, he is a 30 home run a season guy, I can't argue with that. I can't. I mean, it's impossible.
If Mike Trout shows up out of whack and hits 275 with, and you know, and if you skew all his numbers, and he is a drastically lesser player for these 82 games than he was for over 162 when he was like prime Mike Trout, you're just going to go, whatever, he was, quarantined.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think you can expect any of these guys to come back and be 100% of what they once were. And again, here is my bar. It's, you want to make sure that you're not Bartolo Colon at the end of this. But aside from that, what expectations can I possibly have? You're not allowed to go to a facility. You're not allowed to be in contact with the facility. You obviously don't have the resources to be in batting cages constantly and working with infielders and working with pitching coaches. So, of course, I can't expect you to come out and be 100% of what you were. And, yeah, the prorated portion of your salary is, you're not working right now. Why would you get paid 100% of your salary? I just don't believe that's a concession.
But they don't want 100%. They've already agreed to 50%.
I agree, but they are saying that's our concession. That's our pay cut. We don't want to take another pay cut. That's what they're saying. That's already our pay cut.
Yeah, and I think that is at least a starting point of a concession. I think it's something.
Well, I think your best point here is that these are just negotiations that everybody would have when your bosses come to you and say, we want to do X. And you say, well, we have a union, we want to do Y. And that point, I can totally get on board with. I just disagree with you about the definition of how much of their salary is a quote unquote salary cut.
In mothership history,
we go way back to year number one on the network. Here's May 2013, 7 years ago, when Mraz dropped a dumbbell on his face. You went to the gym with your sister's boyfriend, who apparently is a gym rat.
I was put in charge today while my sister had worked for a couple hours to entertain the young lad, shall we say.
Okay.
I asked him, I said, hey, you want to go work out? You come to my gym? Because, as you know, I like to stay fit.
Yeah, oh yeah.
As you know, by looking at me, I'm a big cardio nut. Go after the cardio hard to stay in shape.
Sure, yeah.
He apparently is not. He likes lifting weights. So I figured, you know what? Maybe you could show me a thing or two. I figured it'd be good for my health. So we went on down to the LA Fitness. I got him in. We went to the back weight room. He's showing me stuff. I'm trying to overly impress him, and I'm not impressing anybody, let's be honest.
No,
we get to some kind of fly bicep technique he's trying to show me. I don't even remember because I was knocked senseless after it. And he starts off with like the 50 pounds on each arm, and I knew there was no way that was happening.
Yeah.
So I went to the 25.
Okay.
I put it up about 8 times, no problem. I got to, I think, my 9th time. And when
25 pounds is not a lot of weight to be lifting.
It felt like I was carrying a house.
Okay.
So I put up the 9th time. I twist my arm for some kind of motion he was showing me how to do. And my arm basically collapsed, and there was no reaction time. This dumbbell came flying out of my arm and just drilled me right in the noggin. My initial reaction was, I think I screamed something like, oh my God, or ow. It was something really bad. There was a personal trainer helping somebody right to the right of us. He gets right on his little walkie-talkie he has. The gym's not that big. Calls to the front desk, and out of nowhere, I see people frantically running over, and I hear over the loudspeaker, we need a medic to the back.
Right.
So they have the LA Fitness medic, who's basically a guy with a Band-Aid pouch, comes running over. They're putting ice on my face. I was so embarrassed. I really wanted to cry, but I couldn't do anything about it. Now, I don't know how I'm going to show my face in there going forward. Everybody's going to know I'm the dumbbell guy.
7 years ago, we're learning that Mraz has been a klutz for a long time. He actually is pretty coordinator for a big man. I've seen him on the field. I've seen him play front yard, street side hoops at the block party against somebody 10 years younger. You know, Mraz can move around, but he smashed his finger in a door. He smashed his elbow on the desk and threw a dumbbell into his own face. So a tough run there. You remember that day when you smashed your face?
I do. That was
face?
4 boyfriends ago for my sister. I absolutely remember that. It was brutal. And actually, there's a follow-up to the klutz dumbbell story. it was about 3 years later that I would end up dropping a dumbbell on my toe and fracturing my big toe and having to limp out. And, yeah, I had a full-blown broken toe, and I was in a boot for about a month, if you remember.
Oh.
So I come to work in a boot.
That's right. Wow, so you really have a hit list. You are like Greg Oden.
There's a lot. They're never like the major ACL surgery. It's always a nick here and nick there that ends up being like something you probably could have toughed out, but I end up getting the X-ray and then in an obnoxious boot for no reason. So it has been a long road to hoe for injuries for me.
So essentially you're kind of like the player that could play through it but wants the team doctor to always do the X-ray, the MRI, take a day off.
There's no question. I'm the guy in the NBA that misses the big shot and then just starts grabbing my calf. That's the move I go with. Ooh, something's tight there. Can't blame me. Something's tight in the calf.
Now, what's going to really hurt you is taking this last year off because of the baby away from flag football, because when you finally do come back to the field, everything is at risk of being pulled.
I agree with that, and as I mentioned previously, it's already been decided by some people, not me, because I'm supposed to be the general manager, that I will be moving off a pass-catching role and into the center's role on the offensive line. So I think they're trying to protect against me. Obviously, I still have the hands to run down the field and pull hamstrings. They're just trying to, you know, keep me healthy by having me play center, I think.
So there has been a coup where you are the GM of the Young Guns, and they have overthrown you and pushed you into a different position.
I believe the quote was, the game has changed.
Oh, not really. Wow.
It's more of a spread offense league now than it was back in like 2007, and that we have become an antiquated offense by having me be the slow the sticks guy on third down. And instead, you know, kick me inside, I can snap, I can do all that, but we need to really spread the field with four wide, some speed guys.
Wow,
yeah,
so you basically... You got the Don Shula treatment at the end of his Dolphins run.
I did. Look, I can still play the game at a high level. I know that. I understand the game has changed, and I understand that I'm not thin and running down the field streaking like a CeeDee Lamb. I get that. But, you know, I would have thought, why don't we evolutionize the game back with the slow tight end? That would be my way, right? You know, show that we should bring that kind of game back.
Yeah, so you want to be John Gruden. Want to bring it back to the 90s.
Yeah, ground and pound. I think that, look, it's a you know, copycat league. So if they see the big, bald tight end with the bad goatee running down the field at no wind burst whatsoever, other teams might follow suit and say, we need that kind of playmaker.
What really hurts you is the media attention on Bob's Bar 2, which is now your bar in your backyard.
Yes.
There's a lot of attention right now on you kicking your feet up every day. Certainly every weekend, and just drinking and eating until your heart's desire.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely some talk of why have I drank at least one alcohol drink 45 of the last 48 days. That has come up.
Goodness.
I have now switched, obviously, to lighter seltzers a lot during the week because I don't want to weigh down with beer every day. So, yeah, for sure. And I am officially 11 pounds heavier than when I left the studio. So
Wow!
I have... Look, the gym's ain't open, DA. I don't know what to tell you. We're working in reverse here. We're now 111 pounds away from the weight total of losing.
Whoa, but haven't you been running? What would have happened if you were not running?
Oh, I'd be up 40. Easily. It's
up 40.
DA, I'm having a bag of chips a day. It's not good here.
Up 40. It's like the Lakers in the fourth quarter over the Timberwolves. Yeah, you know, it's just up 40. In hour number one, we were talking about Max Scherzer, who went on a Twitter screed last night and lambasted the owners and said, we're not taking another pay cut and we want more information out there made public. And you would see that the owners are lying to us. And the one big thing that I would say anti-owners here is I think the owners have used, leveraged the pandemic to try to institute some longer ranging financial ramifications on baseball. At least that's the way that I sense it. And I think that's the paranoia of the players as well, that they look at this and they go, these are just opportunistic ways that the owners are trying to divide us, get a salary cap, yada, yada, yada. And so they're just not going to agree to anything. However, the flip side is I think the players are being a bunch of brats, a bunch of babies. They're blaming everything but not taking any responsibility. They've tried to make it sound like they've conceded ground already in the discussions. I don't believe that they have. They just agreed to a prorated portion of their salary, which they should have. They're not playing baseball. I don't know why you'd get paid if you're not playing baseball. But They say, that's already our concession. We've taken our pay cut. We're not doing anything else. I say, that's not really a concession. You're just not working. So why should you get paid? But that's where we stand right now. Mraz, I know you have some very emotional thoughts on this, very strong opinions on this. So what did you think about Scherzer's tweet last night?
Obviously, just more disgust from the players. And I don't think you have to have an either-or side, right? Like, if you're mad at the players right now, that doesn't mean you're pro-owner. I think that's getting lost in a lot of this when people are being pro-player. Like, how could you side with the owners on this? I think the owners are all slime balls, and I think we understand that. But what I have an issue with is I have no idea, and I don't know if you have any idea. Do we know what's happening with the NHL or NBA players and any of their playoff bonuses or money that's coming their way with no fans in the stadium?
No idea.
We have no idea. You know why we don't have any idea? Because they understand how to keep fights private. And if the owners are leaking stuff and they're making it public, great. Shame on them. But there's no reason I need every night to go to bed or wake up and there's another MLB player popping off on Twitter telling fans there's not going to be any season. Whether it's Marcus Stroman, whether it's Trevor Bauer, whether it's Max Scherzer. And then obviously we had Blake Snell on Twitch. Now, there's another thing that bothered me too. Nowhere in Max Scherzer's comments, nowhere in Marcus Stroman's comments, is anybody mentioning player safety, which shows from the get-go that Blake Snell using the player safety thing was actually gross and disgusting because it only comes down to the bottom dollar. Now, when Bogus argued last week about, well, look, they already agreed to this, and he keeps saying this, they already agreed to this. We're now holding the owners accountable, and the players are going over and above and beyond to talk about what they agreed to. And I agree with you. It's not a pay cut. It's a lack of work. But let's also not forget that the owners were pressed probably to have to make a decision with players for like a week's time because of the timing of the pandemic and the shutdown to when opening day was supposed to be, DA, that they needed to come to some sort of agreement on salary. Otherwise, by that first week, they were going to have to start paying players whether games had to be played or not. So the owners were really against it to come up with this plan where you had to, okay, we're going to play you for the amount of games that get paid. Now, all of a sudden, the players are angry at the owners because they're saying they already agreed to it. Well, hold on now. So now the owners, if they didn't go and make this agreement and they tried to figure out every loose end about no fans, what happens if this happens, this could have carried on a month. Are you telling me the players, the moment their first check were due, if there were still negotiations, would have said, no, you have to pay us. Our first check is due. The owners came up with a plan quickly to have something in place so that there wasn't a long-term fight in April when opening day started. And now the players are holding that against the owners? That's where I have a big issue with. Because they would have been the first ones, the players, screaming at the owners, crying at the owners, where's our game check? Not our fault, we're not playing. So the owners came up with this plan, the players agreed, and now it's being held against them that was the end-all, be-all of agreements? That's nonsense, DA.
So 2 points on that. I think it's an important one to remember the timing of baseball. I was at the last spring training game. That was, I think, March the 15th, March the 14th, March the 15th. Opening day, I think, was March the 29th. So there was 2 weeks for baseball to figure out what was happening with paychecks before games were supposed to be played. So you're right. They were under the gun. But more than that, even, there's a smoking gun here. There is a written clause in this contract that either says we can come back to the table if there's no fans, or we can't come back to the table if there's no fans. The owners say the clause says we can. The players say there is no clause. I don't understand how this is such a secret jewel here. I mean, it's either in writing, and I can't believe that this is being fought over. Of course, this was always a possibility. And if the clause says in this agreement that they had, hey, we have to revisit this if we're not going to have fans, then the players have nothing to stand on right now. If there is no clause and it says this cannot be renegotiated, then players win. I don't understand why this clause hasn't been made public yet.
Right. Everything else we're fighting in public and we don't have that clause. And I think when we over deep dive, we lose sight of the simple basic fact of this. This is not about a long-term CBA negotiation. This isn't your clauses up and we're trying to figure this out. This is for 3 months of baseball off a never-before-seen pandemic. And People are hurting. People are unemployed all over the country. And you guys brought up the point about specialists earlier. I understand that they're specialists, but that also doesn't mean that Bryce Harper, if I need to call Roto-Rooter, can come over and change my toilet either. Like, in essence, I think the specialist argument is kind of stupid because we're all specialists to some degree. We all have learned training art, and we can all do certain things that we can't. Like, baseball players can't do some blue-collar things without the proper training. So throw that out the window. I'm sorry, whether you like it or not, a baseball player's salary is not the same salary of the guy working at Stop and Shop or the Giant or supermarket right now. He's not. Now, Bryce Harper could probably ring groceries. They're making way more money than the common person. So asking the common person, whom a lot of which are unemployed right now or laid off, to side with a player in their public fight over their millions is not going to ring true. Yes, the owners are probably being shady to the players. Yes, the owners deserve heat here too. But the players fighting this out publicly, and there goes my voice again, fighting this out publicly on Twitter, looking to drum up regular people with their own damn problems right now, when they're all they're looking to do is watch baseball, is an absolute disgusting disgrace. And what the players don't recognize, which is so foolish, is that if they let this go by the wayside and we get the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs filling that summer void for us in July and August, and then we get football in September, I don't know about you, I'm not going to miss baseball because I'm going to have enough sports on my TV. And when they come back in April, and now I've gone through a second start to an NBA and NHL season, the whole NFL season, maybe some college football, why am I going to invest my time and my money to get their revenue back up because they couldn't figure it out because they were in some stupid match over this? They are not being relatable to the everyday person, and maybe that's not their job, but you know what? Perception shows it is. So how about you stop taking this to Twitter, keep your fights private. If you don't end up having a season and nobody knew what the real problems were, that's one thing. But they've ticked off a lot of people, and they've ticked off me, and I've loved baseball my whole life. They will lose me, and they will lose others. This is a freaking disgrace now.
If they lose this season, we'll be without baseball for 18 months. It's hard to get that back.
Right.
18 months is an enormous amount of time in how fast everything moves these days. And the stakes are so high. It is so pathetic that they're fighting over this. I would say that I don't think the players really have evidence in this agreement that there can't be a renegotiation over no fans, because they would keep citing that. What I keep hearing from them is, I don't want to take a pay cut. We've already taken a pay cut.
Oh.
Well, safety. Well, the owners are just trying to create a salary cap. I just need to hear the players say, no, this is non-negotiable,
right?
Because we talked about this. In March,
yes,
it was agreed we are not taking less because of no fans. But they haven't said that, which leads me to believe that wasn't actually agreed upon. And if it was, then the owners have no fight here.
Exactly.
If it was agreed upon, and then the owners cannot come back and say, no, you know what, we were wrong about that agreement. But we got to see that. If the agreement said in March, we cannot renegotiate this, even if there's no fans, players win. But I haven't heard that cited by the players. I just keep hearing, we've already taken a pay cut. That's not the same thing as your original agreement either says they can come back to the negotiating table with no fans, or they can't. Where is the smoking gun?
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Yesterday we had on Ian Eagle, CBS Sports, Turner, and Yes Network broadcaster on having to potentially call games off of a monitor in a studio instead of actually traveling to the sites. Here was Ian.
DA, I've done a bunch of games through my career calling off of a monitor. Basketball games, NBA Finals, 2013, Miami and San Antonio, Ray Allen's clutch shot in Game 6. I was off a monitor in Secaucus, New Jersey. The World Basketball Championships off a monitor. I've done golf off a monitor. I've done tennis off a monitor. It's doable. Is it the same as being there? Of course not. But if you're asking me, can you do it as a broadcaster or as a play-by-play announcer? The answer is absolutely yes.
It is going to separate great announcers from merely good ones. If they're not allowed on-site, which is definitely in play here, especially expanded teams. There's not going to be, my guess, there might be a play-by-play and color announcer there. Probably not a series of other hosts
probably not the pregame and postgame we're used to on site from the NBA Finals or the conference finals. Probably not an array of sideline reporters. It is probably going to be real bare bones. And so a lot of these guys might be calling it off of a telecast, off of a screen. And you're going to see who's great at this and who's not great at this. And it's going to be very obvious. And I think it's going to be a real separator. And I could see some people getting exposed of, whoa, wow. Ugh, that was a rough listen. Here is Ed Orgeron, national championship winning head coach of the LSU Tigers, on trying to bring players back. This audio is courtesy of Fox News.
SEC has decided that the first day we can start is June 8th. We're going to bring out players in June 1st, go through the proper protocol, make sure everybody's safe. We're going to spend a week testing. And then on June 8th, they can start with our great strength coach, Tommy Mouth. And as you know, Sandra, that Louisiana heat in the summer, you have to prepare for it. We have to get bigger and stronger and faster. But safety is the number one priority for all of our players.
Well, I'll tell you, we're going to get to this story coming up here in hour number four, about 90 minutes from now. But there was a really interesting piece done by Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, about this being the breaking point for the Power Five, and that the Power Five might just say, you know what, we don't have anything financially in common with these smaller schools, so we're on our own. We're making our own rules that we don't have the NCAA to have to answer to. And I bring this up because in the middle of this pandemic, there's a lot of schools saying our entire yearly budget is balanced because of football. We have to play football. We can't afford not to play football. The athletic department, and perhaps at times the school, can't function if we don't play football. So when Ed Orgeron or Mike Gundy or other coaches talk about getting back to play football, it's a reality for a lot of these schools. And I think there's going to be a lot of pushing of boundaries because I just don't think that there's a lot of schools that can afford to not play, and they're going to find any possible way to play. And of course, using non-paid student athletes is a questionable workforce to experiment with, which is why this might be the breakpoint away from the NCAA and saying, you know what, we're not doing that amateur thing anymore because we need to execute the way we want to execute. And that does not fit into what amateurism and, you know, education is really supposed to be. It really never has, but now is a potential tipping point of it. And here is Broncos Hall of Fame running back Terrell Davis, member of the NFL Network as well, on Drew Locke, a young Broncos quarterback in this new-look offense this season. This is courtesy of the Jim Rome Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
I'm excited about it, man. What I saw for him last year, the last year, we all are excited to see how he picks up in 2020. And now you throw some weapons out there. Jerry Jeudy, they got KJ Hamler. You know, they went and got a tight end and Big Albert O. The Broncos, man, they got to keep up with Kansas City, and they recognize that. So you better bring some fire.
Yeah, I love the potential of this Broncos offense. I'm not sold on Drew Locke yet. He showed some flashes last year. I need to see far more before I totally believe on it, which is somewhat ironic because I'm always teased around here for jumping too far onto the bandwagon of questionable quarterbacks. But whether it's Jerry Jeudy, who I love, you know, Philip Lindsay, who's been fantastic. They've got a tight end. They've got two wide receivers now. They've got a really good young running back. They signed Melvin Gordon in the offseason. They've got a young QB as well. It feels like this could definitely be a Broncos offense that is at least fun to watch. Who knows if they win games, at least fun to watch. Darren tweets, it's funny how Mraz is the butt of every intelligent joke out there, but then he breaks down baseball's money issues beautifully. Further shows that he's a smart guy and that the dumb act is just that, an act or shtick. So it's not shtick, and here's why. Mraz really believes everything he says. And that includes Columbus was a pilgrim. They speak Egyptian in Brazil. The Jackson 5 is why they named Jacksonville Jacksonville. He really believes all that. He thought those were true facts. That is not shtick. If he was never on the radio and you went into Subway in 2005 and you asked the guy behind the counter, hey, can I get bacon and the chicken teriyaki? I heard that you were the originator of this. And why do you think Jacksonville's named Jacksonville? He would have said, well, I think the Jackson 5 is from there. These are all actual statements that he has believed at one point in his life. But it is very evident, and I've talked about this before, if you can engage Mraz, he's actually a bright individual. He can be at times very lazy. He can at times cut corners. But in terms of his brain, he is a bright individual when engaged. It's just hard to find things to engage him if they're not sports related. You want to ask him about every matchup in the Stanley Cup playoffs and who has the advantage. You want to ask him about the decision by the Giants to throw on 3rd and 12 in a fourth quarter of a meaningless game in 2008. He has got that. He is going to have that nailed. Now you ask him, you know, who discovered the new world, and forget it. I mean, he just has no idea what happened. But it is, it's not shtick. It is not shtick. It is illuminated because of the microphone in front of him. But Mraz, I mean, this is the essence of you as a human, as an individual, right? As a human being, is that the things you don't care about, you really don't care about. But the things you care about, you really care about.
I think that's a perfect way to put it. Look, if I'm passionate about something, if it really gets me going, I'm not just going to spout off. I will have deep thoughts and have thought things through pretty well. The problem is finding those things, as you said, are few and far between. I don't care enough about the Magna Carta, unfortunately, or learning that. Like, I didn't care enough to really focus on, wait a minute, what was the difference between the Pilgrims and Christopher Columbus? A lot of that was when I was in school. It just engaged me. Even when I was in college, like, we make jokes that it took me 5.5 years to finish. Well, a lot of that was getting those parts or those classes or those credits that I just didn't care about that would have nothing to do. Like, I cared about radio and media. Those classes I was awesome in. I didn't care about my math classes and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think that's a microcosm on me. And I bet you there's a lot more people like me than meets the eye. Like, I don't need to know certain things. Now, you guys in Bogosh obviously believe I do need to know. But, yeah, when it comes to baseball's money problems, I mean, it's not that I'm speaking out of turn. These are deep thoughts I have. I've thought them out. I've thought out scenarios. And that's going to be something. Now, just the only, if we could, this is where I'm going to sound like an idiot again. What do you call those things, like, after you go through a whole amble, and then you need to add something at the end, but it really doesn't matter on what you said?
A little postscript?
A postscript. Okay, my postscript on what I just said, and I think something that really is important to me, and I just need to put out there.
Uh-huh.
I have no issue with you talking about the Columbus Pilgrim thing, the Magna Carta recently, whatever. The Michael Jackson Jackson 5 thing, it needs to be reiterated because I feel like for whatever reason over the years this continues to be lost in translation.
Uh-huh.
The story we did on the show was Michael Jackson's elephant escaped the Jacksonville Zoo.
Uh-huh.
This isn't, I didn't just come in and go, oh, Jacksonville, though. Jackson 5 lived there. No. And I thought out loud, what are the odds of that? That of all the zoos and cities in America, that Michael Jackson's elephant escaped the Jacksonville Zoo, which made me think, is there a tie-in between Michael Jackson and his family and a town named Jacksonville? Which is how I came to the determination. Jacksonville, Florida, newer kind of town. Did the Jackson 5 have any kind of tie there? It wasn't that I just parachuted in and thought that. It all started with the elephant, D.A. The elephant needs to be told when telling the history of why I thought Jacksonville was named after the Jackson 5.
Okay, that...
Because I think in context, people might go, well, that is kind of ironic. I don't blame them there.
Yeah, I know. I think one point against you, though, is that the naming of Jacksonville, I think everybody roundly knows would have happened well before the fame of the Jackson 5. Like, the fame of the Jack, that's like suggesting Jacksonville was named in the 60s.
Right, but I'm not saying it didn't exist, but it could have changed names if they lived there. Like, I understand that it's wrong, so in hindsight it's funny to laugh, but it's not as if, D.A., we were sitting in 11th grade American history and somebody ever mentioned when Jacksonville
was
invented.
How many towns do you think got their name in the 1960s?
I mean, you see street names change all the time for athletes and stuff.
But that's a little different than town names.
But can you at least admit this? The irony and the odds that of all the zoos for Michael Jackson's elephant to end up in Jacksonville, doesn't that at least raise an eyebrow and it requires some thought?
Well, there is a connection there. But, you know, just again,
I think the obvious answer is, well, no, they named the city of Jacksonville like almost every other city in America prior to like the 1969 American Bandstand appearance.
Okay. American Bandstand. Good show. Now, I'm admitting you're right. There's no denying you're right. But in the moment when you read that story like we did, that's the other thing. You hear a lot of me. Like, I don't process a lot of things off the cuff history-wise, as you can tell if you listen to the show for a long time.
Really?
And I have no problem saying what comes to my mind, and sometimes it bites me, and that was one that bit me. But all I'm saying is, when we have that discussion, and I'm very glad that you said when I'm passionate about something, although you did call me lazy and everything, I just think when using the Michael Jackson Jacksonville thing, I think leaving out the part about his elephant escaping the Jacksonville Zoo is doing me a disservice. Okay. And I just would say, going forward, there should always be that postscript to that.
Okay.
Yes, that's folks, great. Not an act.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
So, guys, we have had Florida man, we've had Florida woman, now we have Florida bear. Guest to be an 18-month-old bear weighing 250 pounds. Now, my math is a little rusty. I think that's 1.6 jock loans, if I'm remembering the correct conversion rate. Anyway, this bear wandering through Fort Myers, Florida on Tuesday morning. Wildlife officials weren't sure how to capture it, because I guess the fear was if they shot it with a tranquilizer, it's not an immediate reaction, and spooking the bear might cause it to kind of run angrily through the neighborhood where all these people were, so they didn't want to do that. What they settled on is what I'm calling the Miraz plan. They laid out some sugared donuts, they sprayed the area with blueberry pie scent, and they lured the bear into a trap and caught it without incident as it munched on its donuts smelling blueberry pie.
Amazing.
And by now the bear is supposed to be back safely in the wild, but they used donuts and the scent of blueberry pie to get this bear under control.
There's a couple of things here that I absolutely love. Number one, I don't think bears get enough run in Florida. It's always about gators and snakes and mosquitoes. Nobody ever talks
iguanas.
About the bears. Yeah, iguanas, the Florida panthers, the dolphins. We never actually have a bear reference in Florida, so I like this. And Fort Myers actually was the site of my first job. I don't remember any place that I would have ever expected to see a bear. But apparently right now, they've come out of hibernation to come looking for their food. So there's a lot of bear sightings all over the place. So, wow, what did you know? It's in Fort Myers, Florida. But number two, Miraz, out of these two things, what would draw you into a trap easier? Is it a box of Krispy Kreme donuts or is it blueberry pie scented spray?
It would definitely be the box of Krispy Kremes, although both would really do the trick. And I laugh because I know we're partially kidding, but there is no doubt about me. Let's say I was let's just say me and DA were at odds, right? We're back at the office. We're arguing over something with the show. And I don't want to see DA. I don't even want to have a conversation because maybe I know I screwed something up or anything like that. And, I'm walking in and out of the show, and TA plants a box of Krispy Kremes on that newsroom counter we have. Open, untouched. I'm going to smell it. I walk out. There is no doubt if TA was like hiding in a cabinet that I would at some point poke over, reach my fingers into that Krispy Kreme, and he could pop out and have to have the conversation with what we had. So I know that's not the same thing as a bear trap, but the point being, you absolutely could use a box of donuts like that if they were fresh smelling like that to trap me. And frankly, if there was a hot blueberry pie and I was smelling that as well, while it may not be my first pie of choice, pizza, apple, you know the deal, I would still go over and take a gander. So there's no doubt this bear trap would have worked for me.
I love that Miraz qualified pizza as the type of pie he would want.
Well, there's
blueberry, apple, pizza.
DA, again, I understand that it's not made with a croissant roll, but it is a pizza pie. So, okay. Yes, pizza and apple, my two best pies.
So this is good to know. So if I ever need you to, say, edit down an interview or perhaps go back over the best of for the day, I just have to plant a box of Krispy Kremes inside editing booth number two, and that way I can trap you in there, slam the door, and then you're forced to actually do the work.
It's a very funny image picturing this happening.
But yes, 100% you could trap me to do it. I know, like, it's funny, but it's actually true. There's no doubt. If we went to that production studio and you were like, oh, Merez, there's some donuts in there. I saw the box open. And you slammed the door and held the lock shut and then wrote on a piece of paper, now go in there and edit until you get out. Yeah, you would trap me. That would work on me. There's no doubt about it.
Also, did you know that there was a blueberry spray scent? I mean, I don't know if Scripted Fragrance has this as part of the candle line. But I had no idea. Like, where do the cops get...
Poopery.
But it smells like blueberry pie?
I'm pretty sure they have pie scented ones. Yeah, so after you go, you know, roll two, turn two, then you obviously spray the blueberry pie down.
All right, so other than poopery for the bathroom, what other spray uses are there to smell like blueberry pie?
I don't want to get too graphic, DA, but they sell certain stuff in certain adult stores that would have that scent and taste.
Huh.
Wow. Huh. Didn't see that one coming, DA.
Well,
I
want to prevent against the DA tweets where he gets those sent to him, so I'm going to get out ahead of it.
Okay.
Right. Oh, you're doing him a service.
Yes.
Not pointing out that your personal knowledge of two things, poo covering smell and sex toy stores, are where you get your blueberry smells from.
As I said, you could trap me with anything, Bogish.
By the way, if you do come across a bear, here is what they say to do. Do not approach the bear. Keep a safe distance. If you find yourself close to a bear at close range, this could happen. Again, you're hanging out in the yard, you're walking up the driveway, you're walking in a park, and suddenly there's a bear. Do not run. Remain standing upright. Speak to the bear in a calm, assertive voice. This is also how you coach Mitch Trubisky.
Hello,
bear. And back up slowly while leaving the bear with a clear escape route. Don't run. Now, that would be my first inclination. Run away from the bear as fast as possible. But a bear can oftentimes outrun you. So you want to make it clear, I'm the human. I'm Matt Nagy. You're Mitch Trubisky. I have your job. You don't want to do this. I'm the authority. I'm going to walk backwards to the film room. And then you go and you eat in the cafeteria and turn off all the TVs. You want to make sure you do this. Mraz, I don't think that you live in a neighborhood where there would be bears, but I know that there's a park where you sometimes run to and that you sometimes play flag football as an Algie Crumpler-esque tight end. And I want you to know this is how you would deal with a bear there.
Well, that makes sense. I probably still would run and not remember that in the moment, but I like the idea of trying to have a calm, rational conversation with a growling grizzly. Hello, bear. How are you?
Well, you will not come across a grizzly bear. There's no grizzly bears anywhere where you are.
Grizzly bears? What's the typical bear? Like Bear Mountains in New York. I like going hiking up there.
Black bear. You get
a black bear. Okay. Aren't grizzlies black, though? That doesn't really make any sense.
Definitely a different bear. Grizzly bear is an enormous bear, usually found in, like, Canada and way up there.
Huge. Like the Vancouver grizzlies.
Yes, like the Vancouver Grizzlies. Mm. That's exactly right.
All right, I got it.
Which came first, the team or the bear?
Obviously the bear, and the team was named after him.
They named the expansion basketball team, and then the bear colony was like, that's a great name. We should become that.
Let's get bigger and angrier and shoot hoops.
Come on down.
Governor Phil Murphy told our friends Moose and Maggie yesterday the Garden State trending towards the Giants and the Jets starting their seasons on time at MetLife Stadium.
This assumes, Maggie, that the metrics are continuing to go to your earlier question. You know, we, God willing, we don't have to pull the emergency brake, that this continues going in the right direction.
Now, before we leave Moose and Maggie, if anybody wants to stop me here, you can, but there is video floating around now, the interweb, of our good buddy Moose during this conversation with Governor Murphy, maybe nodding off for a brief instant. The history of WFAN host falling asleep on the air is well known. And it looks like maybe possibly our buddy Moose is the latest victim.
There's two things. Number one.
Go ahead.
I want to believe that he fell asleep. I don't know. I think he has such a big head, Moose, that there's this nod-off moment on the video, and it's at MNM WFAN, where it's like his hand collapses because his head's so heavy. But the other point here is if he did fall asleep, our own Wizard of Watch DA, Andrew Kaplan, is also the Wizard of Watch M&M, not M&M's, M&M, and apparently now will have sabotaged Moose because this is the only reason this video becomes available is because Kaplan has put it out there, and I must ask, did Kaplan throw him under the bus?
Look, this is the end-all be-all about this clip, okay? Number one, Cap, you don't dare ever question the integrity of Andrew Kaplan, okay? Ever. He's got one responsibility, and that is to keep those damn cameras rolling at all points in time so that if there is a viral clip, it is caught. He did his job here, okay? He did his job. Number two, Moose is saddled with three screaming kids every single day. He's not getting much sleep. The guy is waking up. He's dealing with the crazy family. We've already seen video clips of him looking like he's got just a crazy army of hellions running around his house. The man is he is wiped out, okay? He's out. But I can tell you, that is not sleeping. Okay, I know sleeping. I've seen a host sleep. A sleeping on the air is you are bored, you nod off, you close your eyes, and then you quickly, suddenly wake up like a deer in headlights. Oh, my God, what did I do? Because when you fall asleep, you lose consciousness, and then you don't have any idea how long you were asleep for. Moose does not do that here. He leans his big moose head on his fist, those big meat hooks, okay? And he slides the face up the wrist. It is more of a nose scratch by the back of the hand than it is falling asleep, and he never loses consciousness to where he wakes up and goes, oh, my God, where am I? So he never actually falls asleep. Is he exhausted? Absolutely. Can you see him largely bored by the interview? No question about it. But is that sleeping? That is not sleeping. That is close, but it's not sleeping.
I will agree, and just I will end on this note. One thing that should be noted, and Cap, I think Cap does a great job, but since the return of Moose and Maggie on camera, thanks to Andrew Kaplan, I follow them, and if you follow Moose or anybody on Twitter, Moose now, for whatever reason, with these glasses he has, is morphing in quarantine to a pseudo Elton John. Moose is starting to look like an old fat Elton, and I don't know if that's good or bad. And maybe
he's doing the show from a piano.
Right, how tired he looks. But with the glasses that Moose is now wearing in a lot of these clips, he is starting to look like a fat Elton John.
You know, I like
how you have to qualify that. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't think it's a good thing.
Well, I mean, some people think Elton's
I don't think anybody
handsome.
Goes, you know what Moose really needs? To look like a fat Elton John. That would really help out his look.
I do, though, want to do a scientific study on Moose's fatigue level right now because, yes, those three kids, and I met them, they are super cute and super sweet, but they are insane. However, before quarantine and before we sat here from 6 to 10 a.m., Moose did a radio show with Sean's good buddy Taz from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., would drive back home to Connecticut, do whatever he had to do, then drive back into Manhattan, was on local TV in New York sometimes until 10, 11, 12 at night, would drive back to Connecticut, take a nap, then drive back to do this radio show with Taz. They were... I don't know how Moose lived during that, I don't know, two-year window. He actually might be more refreshed now at home in quarantine, even with those kids, because he's in one place. He's not crisscrossing the tri-state area, driving hundreds of miles a day. So I don't know that he actually is more tired now than he used to be.
I think that's fair. I would say this would have been much more likely that Moose fell asleep if this was a year ago in this time slot. I think now, it's more unlikely it was actually falling asleep. And you know what? I kind of like it because it kind of looks like a real Moose kind of grazing his head down just a little bit. You know, swinging his head down, smelling the grass.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know, maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
One of my favorite advanced analytics ever. Should Mraz's flag football team adopt an old school ground and pound offense?
Hard-hitting topic.
On Twitter, 72% said yes. Mraz's flag football team, the Young Guns, should go back to an old-school offense. On Facebook, also the predominant answer is yes, 67%. Here are the advanced analytics behind Mraz's career. He claims to have scored 26 touchdowns in 34 seasons. That would be two half seasons every calendar year. So that would be two touchdowns a season for 17 seasons. In his last year at tight end, he caught a career-low 6 passes for 0 touchdowns, which is why the team wants to go away from Mraz as a pass-catching tight end and make him more of a blocker at center and then let other guys run downfield. They have said that the game has passed Mraz by. Mraz says, let's bring it back to ground and pound. We want to go old school here. Pound the rock like Rex Ryan of the Jets or John Gruden wanted to bring back football from the 90s. Also, according to Mraz Advanced Analytics, he has caught more passes since the day Mr. Six ripped his Achilles than Mr. Six. So it's an important line of demarcation in flag football world on Long Island. Time now for your epic fail. Mraz attempts to defend thinking Jacksonville was named after the Jackson 5.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
The Michael Jackson Jackson 5 thing, it needs to be reiterated because I feel like for whatever reason over the years this continues to be lost in translation. I didn't realize Montana bordered Canada. Uh-huh. The story we did on the show was Michael Jackson's elephant escaped the Jacksonville Zoo. Uh-huh. This isn't, I didn't just come in and go, oh, Jacksonville, though. Jackson 5 lived there. No. And I thought out loud, what are the odds of that, that of all the zoos and cities in America that Michael Jackson's elephant escaped the Jacksonville Zoo, which made me think, is there a tie-in between Michael Jackson and his family and a town named Jacksonville?
Where there is love.
Started with the elephant, DA. The elephant needs to be told when telling the history of why I thought Jacksonville was named after the Jackson 5.
Okay, that...
Because I think in context, people might go, well, that is kind of ironic. I don't blame them. Then what the heck's a Trojan if it's not a condom?
I think one point against you, though, is that the naming of Jacksonville, I think everybody roundly knows, would have happened well before the fame of the Jackson 5.
I'll reach out my hand.
Again, I understand that it's wrong, so in hindsight it's funny to laugh, but it's not as if, DA, we were sitting in 11th grade American history and somebody ever mentioned when Jacksonville
was
invented.
How many towns do you think got their name in the 1960s?
I liked Michelangelo. I mean, you see street names change all the time for athletes and stuff.
Well, that's a little different than town names.
But, DA, can you at least admit this? The irony and the odds that of all the zoos for Michael Jackson's elephant to end up in Jacksonville, doesn't that at least raise an eyebrow and it requires some thought?
Just call my name.
I think the obvious answer is, well, no.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Our toll-free line sponsored by Geico. Geico has introduced the Geico Give Back 15% credit car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers that last your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. C2 tweets, 51 points from Corey Brewer's nice, but I'll forever remember him as the 11,000-step travel on a fast break. Alien OG tweets, you can run from a bear as long as you're faster than the other people you're with. Mr. Fahrenheit tweets, the Michael Jacksonville Zoo Gate denial by Mraz, similar to Jordan denying that he did not have anything to do with Isaiah Thomas being left off the Dream Team. Also early, Ask the Pros for tomorrow, was Gary Musk born in Gary, Indiana, or Jacksonville, Florida? Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel and musical director, audio director. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. Thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headlines. We'll see you tomorrow for a Target Demo Friday. The Mothership disconnects.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.